available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We're back to football. No more of that round ball stuff. We're going to talk some football. We got spring games coming up. Dave's got a full recap of previews for every single spring game that's out there. Maybe not. That's not going to happen. But we got a lot of questions this week, which is great. We asked for questions last week. So if you want to send us a question in, pac12podcast@gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got a bunch of other topics we're going to talk about too. If you want to tweet us some topics you'd like us to discuss, you can do that at pac12podcast over on the Twitters. The website where you can find all of our episodes, pac12podcast.com. We maintain that thing at least once a week, right? We do something to
minimum.
It?
Minimum. Minimum once, you said a week?
We yeah. We do stuff. I mean, we put the shows up there. That's about it. Maybe at some point we could actually put some Pac-12 content.
I think minimum is a really good word to describe our show, though.
Minimum effort. Like, for the amount of, like, listeners we get and the amount of, like, feedback, it's like, we are definitely putting in the minimum.
We do the minimum.
And we get, yeah, I think we get a lot.
We can promise you at least the minimum.
Yes. We are always the Mendoza line, you know, basically we are hovering around the minimum, whatever the Mendoza line is for podcasting. We are right there. That's where we live. If you want to talk to some other POC listeners, you don't have to involve us. You can do it over on Reddit, reddit.com/r/podcast.
When was the last time you looked at that?
I haven't done that for a while. Have you? You were supposed to do it. You normally would. Or you would sometimes.
Yeah, I'm gonna go
is it still there? Like, hopefully it's still
there. I'm checking it out right now. Okay. Yeah, okay. The last post in there was literally 4 months ago.
Okay, so need to go over there and post.
But there are 209 members.
We got some members on that. For us, not even looking at it. You used to. You used to post, like, the episode sometime, but somehow that fell off. Your minimum effort, that was a little above minimum.
This is above minimum.
You had to drop back
the Reddit
down.
The Reddit was above minimum.
Yeah, you had to drop back.
I had to find my my comfort zone again.
Yes. And you're in your groove now with the minimum.
I'm in my trough.
If you have the Apple Podcasting app, you could follow and rate us over there with a 5-star rating. We appreciate that. We got a couple last week. I don't think we got any new ones this week, so get in there.
We expect maximum effort from our listeners.
Mm. Yes.
Minimum from us, but maximum from you. That's the grand bargain that we have struck here.
Even if you have the Spotify app too, you listen over there, like you got a Google phone or something, you can leave us 5-star rating there as well. All of that helps to grow the show that we put minimal amount of effort in. Well, okay. I got a bunch of topics written down here. David probably doesn't like any of them, but there's some stuff that's been happening in the college football.
Why do you always naysay yourself right then? You're always denigrating your own work here. You're always saying, oh, but Dave's not going to like it. Oh, I'm sad. I put in all this work and Dave's not going to like it. Do I like anything? No.
That's true. That is fair.
Yeah.
You probably like a
higher
percentage of
what's the list of things that I like on this show?
Or in life? Like your kids, you're like, you know, it depends. Like probably like 75% of the time, you're not real happy with your kids.
I love my children.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing? You doing okay?
I'm great. I'm great, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little like spring ball. You forget like the work that kind of goes in. We don't get as much access, but we can do a ton of interviews. So it just creates a lot of work after practice. So
Ryan, I just went to my third UCLA football practice.
Yeah.
I want to say 5 years.
Okay.
And it was so hot out there.
Oh,
and I was so tired. And I remembered, like, it's really, look, We don't often complain about our jobs here because, you know, and we know. It's really easy.
Yeah.
Like we're covering sports. It's a great time. Standing on a hot field sucks, man.
It's not good.
I don't like it.
No, I'm doing an afternoon one today. So
that's no good.
Yeah. So you did the morning, so at least maybe it was like...
And I realize I'm saying standing on a hot field when there's like, you know, dudes like, you know, working really hard on that same
right.
field in the heat. But like, I'm
36. They don't get paid. They should be out there working.
Yeah, you know? I don't want to stand there.
Yeah. Like, I guess the good thing is that we only get to be out there for like 20 minutes and then they make us leave.
Nah, UCLA increased our access. It's like, guys, could we like find a comfortable middle? Like, give us an hour. You don't need to give us two. That's a joke. UCLA keep giving us access.
What about the, can you talk to the defensive coordinator this century?
Yeah. No, we already had an interview with Bill McGovern. They've loosened things up. It's glasnost. We're full on like, opening things up.
Very nice.
Pretty soon they're going to open a McDonald's there.
I love it.
A little Soviet Union joke for you.
Yeah, that's good. They closed them down, I think.
Yeah. Well, they're not the Soviet Union anymore.
That's true too. But yeah. They're kind of acting like it. So, so the access at USC, we can get a lot of content from interviewing players and coaches, just not as much as we're watching, but it still just, you know, creates a lot of work. And so it's good. It's like kind of getting back into the groove of things. I know not everyone loves spring football, and I'm, I guess, known as the spring ball guy. I'm actually going to Palm Springs this weekend, so there are the Arizona, ASU, and Stanford spring games on Saturday. Probably have to watch the replay.
You're not going to watch the springs in the springs?
I'm gonna
how your devotion to spring games is so strong that you're only vacationing in a place that also includes the word spring.
That's I love it. It's like bachelor party weekend thing. So I'll be golfing probably when these spring games are going on, but I will try to watch.
Was it a tough call for you to go on the bachelor party when you knew that spring games were happening?
I've literally been gone. Remember like our Vegas weekend? Like,
yes.
Every weekend since I've been gone also. Like I'm going somewhere everywhere. Like this is probably a little too much. But
remember what I said earlier that we have very easy jobs?
Yes.
Some of us have easier ones than others.
Maybe. Our Saturday practices are closed. We can't go. So I can go out of town on Saturdays. I just get a Zoom with Lincoln Riley and get to do that. So there will be three Pac-12 spring games this weekend. So cool. Maybe you guys go check them out. I think they're all on Pac-12 Network, if I'm not mistaken. David, I'm sure since I'm going to be out of town, you need to watch these live because I can watch the replay, but you're going to pick up some nuances when it's live. Maybe leave a hot mic on a little too much and you hear David Shaw say something he shouldn't say. So we need you to watch these live, David. Can you do that for the show?
Not a chance.
Okay. Didn't think so. All right. So I put a bunch of notes in here. The first thing, this is probably almost not quite a week ago, but The Athletic did a kind of long form on Jimmy Lake. Just sort of like, hey, what went wrong? Talking to sources. I think there was at least one player that went on record in the article if you guys want to go. Check it out. The 35,000 foot version of it was like, yeah, shit was bad. Like it just, you know, he wasn't very good at his job. They figured that out. They wanted to move on. Jen Cohen just, you know, they got it right. I mean, they got it wrong, but then they realized they got it wrong. They didn't like double triple down on getting it wrong. And then they moved on from Jimmy Lake. But yeah, I'm sure a lot of Washington fans read that. There's been some good stuff in The Athletic. If you guys aren't subscribers, I would recommend it, even though that's a competitor or just a different company than us. I don't know. You didn't get to check this one out, David. It's just, you know, it was one of those things where it's just like, wow, he did that. He did that. And that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And why would you do that as the head coach? Like that's sort of what, but it wasn't like, I didn't feel like, oh my God, this is going to ruin his life sort of thing, or he should never coach again. It just was sort of like, he wasn't very good.
Yeah. Well, I think it was results on the field. And then they were trying to establish a pretext based on like, I don't know, pushing players in the locker room or something.
Yeah, that was like the thing.
But it's all, I mean, it was just, he was not very good on the field.
Yeah.
He and basically like, derailed the program.
And, you know, not being, it's just, yeah, there. Whatever reason, sometimes people they get put in these positions where it's like a dream job, right? Like, hey, this is a higher level job than I ever thought I would get. Like if they, you know, make you CEO of some company and then you just like tense up and just start doing stupid shit because you're like so worried about losing your job. And
you want to know the best story I have from my employment history, which is somewhat related to that idea.
Okay.
So I worked at an SEO firm back in 2011.
All right. That was a thing then?
Yeah, yeah. And so wow. I was hired as an account manager.
Okay.
So I had like 60 accounts. It was this
that
real,
means sales,
it was
by
this,
the way.
It for... was this really crappy company.
Why did they say account manager when it's just a sales guy?
But, well, okay. Yeah, I was like the front man. I wasn't the sales guy. I was the front man for after they had gotten sold on the bullshit from the sales guy.
Yes.
And then I was the one who was to execute that plan, which was all bullshit to start out with.
Right, right. The sales guy promises everything, and then you get left with like, "What? Oh, wait, we can't do that."
But
sorry.
As you hear on this show, I can talk a little bit.
Yes.
So I was there for like 2 months, and it was like this real like collection of mouth breathers who were working there with me. And after a little while, the really smarmy guy who runs the sales department comes over to me, and he's like, "Hey, I'm taking over the content department too, and I want you to run it." And keep in mind, I am at this time, I'm 25. Okay. I'm an idiot, like a certifiable, like well, dumbass.
I don't think you have to say that to anyone that listens to this show.
And I've worked in this position for 2 months, and I hate this place.
So he has so a great read on you.
So I say, yes, I'm going to run your content department. And I get over there, and I'm in charge of like 25 people. Like 25 people in this content department for this SEO
company. For every year you've been on this
right,
earth.
Right, right, right. I've never managed a person, let alone 25 of them. And many of them are like much older than me, have actually been doing this and know what they're talking about to the extent that anyone in SEO knows what they're talking about, which is very minimal. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, literally 2 weeks in, and I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life. I'm like, I'm going to quit. I'm just going to do this because I don't feel like I'm up to the job. I don't feel like I'm capable of doing this, so I'm going to quit. Jimmy Lake, you should have followed the Dave Woods plan.
Okay. Where would David Woods be if you just stuck it out? Because you can bullshit your way through.
The problem is I was raised by my mother who established in me like a certain level of like work integrity where if I'm not doing the job well, I feel really bad all the time. It just doesn't apply to this podcast.
I was going to say, like, I'm looking up at the board and we have, like, results on this podcast from 2016. And at no point could you say,
like, no.
Would your mom approve of the job that's being done?
I would have felt too guilty. That was really the fundamental issue. I was like, just like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not doing this well, so I need to quit. Jimmy Lake, that's all I'm saying. Got to have a little bit more integrity and just quit the job you're not good at.
Yeah. He wasn't good. And but if you check it out, if you're a Washington fan, maybe an Oregon fan, whatever, just Pac-12 fans in general. I know some of you Pac-12 or some of our listeners are fans of the Pac-12. If you want to get a little expose on what went wrong with Jimmy Lake, a lot of it was you could see on the surface, but I recommend checking that one out. We did get some breaking news this week. Our fearless leader, George Klyavkov, tweeted out, this was on March 29th, this is about a week ago, the Pac-12 is moving to permanent remote work. We will no longer have an HQ/office. Teammates will have flexibility on where to live and work. We will find a much smaller and less expensive studio to continue to produce 850 plus live events per year. Hashtag back the pack. Approval. It sounds like you approve.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Smart guy doing the smart and obvious thing. You know, we had bandied about the idea of just moving the HQ to Vegas, and who knows, maybe that'll still happen. But
it should.
Going remote solves the problem that people brought up when they were talking about moving the entire HQ, which is what about people who want to still be in the Bay Area?
Right.
Or wherever they are. This makes so much sense. More employers should be doing this. It brands the Pac-12 as forward thinking. Like, I think it's really, really good from a lot of different angles. And it's smart financially. They're going to save a bunch of money, whole bundle of money doing this in the very near term. And I think it'll make it a more, a better way to attract talent for the conference as a whole.
I remember it was either Canzano or Wilner story about, it was like the head of whoever like was running the Pac-12 network, like the director, whatever it was, the head, not Larry Scott, but like the guy that was under him. It was, you know, you're running a TV network, like where the TV network people live, Southern California. So the dude was getting private planes back and forth between LA. So he would fly up for the week and come back down. So there's just one of those things that's like, oh, we have a, we have a sports network. We need someone to run it. Well, all the good people are in Los Angeles because that's where all this shit is. So we're going to fly the guy up and back. I think he lived in like Manhattan or Hermosa Beach or something. And they would fly him up and back each week. So stuff like that, you're not going to have to do anymore, which is great. Our good friend, our close personal friend, John Wilner. Is it like, were we at his barbecue this weekend?
I was in his wedding.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yeah. He put a story up soon afterwards. And one of the things that caught my eye from that one, David, was he said, okay, here you do two things. Like just, like you said, someone smart that's like good at their job. You know, that's George Kliavkov. So if you would have said, okay, your commissioner makes $2 million a year, not five, just he makes $2 million, which is a great living. That's about what you would make as a Power Five commissioner. If you did that, and if you also didn't pay $8 million a year in rent, because that's just exorbitant, if you just, those things are like above and beyond what should have happened. If you just cut both of those things in half, which would just be kind of reasonable for whatever, it would have saved the conference $70 million over Larry Scott's tenure. So like literally two just kind of like brain dead. Of course you don't need to pay this guy this much. Of course you don't need to pay this much in rent. That's $70 million more dollars for the conference. Just doing that.
It's very simple math. It's almost $1 million per year per school that could have been doled out.
Because, which can go a long way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about $8 million for the rent and then three additional million for the salary, which was way overpaying for what Larry Scott did. Yeah, I mean, it's substantial. I mean, you do that, you do enough smart stuff like that, you're actually going to see a meaningful change in the bottom line for a lot of schools. And with how cash-strapped some of these athletic departments still are after the pandemic, it's huge. It's going to be meaningful. And I think it also... smart, prudent decisions like that are going to buy him a lot of goodwill on the campuses. And so maybe when he does need to make a big push, which I think we're going to get to with this NIL stuff, maybe he can get a little bit more buy-in from presidents because he's making prudent financial decisions on the other end.
Yeah. No, I agree. Just there's just certain things you need to do, and Larry Scott wasn't doing them. One of the other things he did... Now, I only saw a tweet. I didn't find the article on this. Did you see this before that... There was so basically they get an allotment of Rose Bowl tickets. I think this was like 2019.
Yeah, it was like it was one of the expose texts or something from Canzano, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
And where like, yeah, where essentially they had for staff in the Pac-12 HQ, they had previously gotten as one of the perks of the job two, I think, free tickets per staffer to the Rose Bowl each year. Larry Scott did away with that, but then like doled them out to like the friends and family on his kid's soccer team. So just like used his commissioner prerogative to like give those away to people he wanted to give them away to rather than the people who had been, you know,
like working on it and everything.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just, and like, how does that jive with everyone's understanding of Larry Scott? Yes.
100%.
So it's just, it's an anecdote that just rings absolutely true.
Yeah. Hold on. We should,
The truth is we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit. He fleeced this league for a number of years and still had a lot of confidence from the decision makers up until like the last year of his tenure.
That's the thing where it's almost like you're running this organization.
He was running a confidence game.
Yeah. And he's like paying himself, giving himself raises, giving himself perks. And he still had bosses. I mean, he had presidents of universities that for whatever reason just blindly went along with what he said. And, you know, I get they have a lot going on, but he was smart enough to con all of those guys to backing him up to the point where he didn't even have to talk to the athletic directors because the athletic directors know what's going on. And they'd be like, hey, Prez, like, this isn't right. Or like, oh, he's good. Trust me. He's going to be good. It took a while for that to kind of erode, but he made a crap load of money while doing it. You know, life-changing type of money. So he's
a very wealthy man now.
He beat the system for sure.
Proud of him.
Beat the crap out of the system.
Proud of him.
Yeah.
But NIL, man.
We got to talk some NIL?
We got to talk some NIL.
So Wilner did a column, I think it was like yesterday or something, or the day before. Maybe.
Yeah, there was a follow-up today, but I think he did one yesterday.
Okay. About talking about the NIL is changing the landscape of recruiting. The collectives are out there. We're seeing a lot of money be poured into this, sort of like a GoFundMe for boosters to money in.
And the Pac-12's at the forefront, right? They're doing everything they need to do?
No. The Pac-12 was mentioned, at least the original article, where talking about like a Caleb Williams having a deal with Beats by Dre, but that's more of an individual one-off. He was saying the issue is going to be if you go to the University of Texas and you're an offensive lineman, you get $50,000 a year. That's their collective they have set up. That doesn't mean you have to be a superstar quarterback that was on Good Morning America. That guy's going to get his money no matter where he goes to school. Yeah. If you're like the backup left guard, would you rather be the backup left guard at Oregon where you don't get any money or the backup left guard at Texas where you get $50,000? He seems like that. He feels like there's a lot of schools, at least the source he talked to, there's a lot of schools in the Pac-12 that aren't willing to play this game. And he questioned that it could sink the Pac-12 as we know it, if that's a summary, I guess, of that.
Yeah. I think it's a concern. I think the Pac-12 is slow. I don't think it's going to be permanently so. Like, I think it's not as... I think under the table, a lot of this is being centrally directed by the campuses at other schools and not necessarily going to happen in the Pac-12 to that extent. Like, I don't think it's just Tennessee just randomly came up with this stuff on the booster groups. This was the communication going on between an associate athletic director and some boosters and the whole thing and setting it up.
Yeah.
I think the Pac-12 is just knowing USC and UCLA alone, the compliance departments are robust. And they love getting after it. And I think there's just throughout the league, I think there's more of an effort to be compliant, even with perceived rules that don't exist or what you might think might happen in the future.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else is like, oh, it's free game. Let's do whatever the hell we've been doing, but let's do it up front now. And I think, you know, there's going to be movement. I think eventually it's going to sink down to like already on our message board. There's, you know, not, and these aren't the like $1 million donors, but there's people saying, oh, well, I'd be willing to throw in a few thousand a year to a collective. And I think it's going to happen, but I think it's truly going to be somewhat informal in the Pac-12, whereas I do believe it's more formalized and centrally directed in the other schools. And that's just the nature of the beast. But like with everything, I think it will be a competitive imbalance. I mean, I think there's going to be much more of that in the SEC, in the Big 12, than there is in the Pac-12, or even the Big 10. I think the Big 10 is probably going to, you know, be in a similar boat as the Pac-12 because they all are slightly more high-minded institutions.
Yeah, So the issue being, do you feel like this could sink the Pac-12, or this could split the Pac-12, where there's schools that are willing to play the collective game, and there's schools...
No, because I think they're all going to get there eventually to whatever extent that like, and I'm not meaning to just pick them out, but like to whatever extent there is a booster group for Oregon State football, I think they're going to create this thing. Right. It's just a question of the timing. All of everything else, it feels like it was almost a turnkey operation for like Tennessee to get up and running, for Texas to get up and running.
Yeah,
it's not for these schools because, and this is just my theory on it, there isn't the infrastructure of cheating that was already present at a lot of these other schools. Like, so at UCLA, for example, they've got donors to tap for donor things, but it's an entirely different thing that they haven't been providing money which is acquiring players. That hasn't really been a donor expense to now. I mean, it's, you know, get to the private jet, you know, the accoutrement that go with recruiting, but not the actual act of paying the players.
Right.
And so that's a different pool of money than it is at these other schools where they've had robust cheating mechanisms for a long time. And I'm not denigrating cheaters because I think everyone should have been cheating. But the Pac-12 just hasn't really been as extensive with their cheating. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, situations where there's cheating. USC has done some cheating. UCLA has done some cheating. But it's not to the level of what was happening in these SEC schools.
And I would say because of the disparity in the amount of money that the schools get distributed, we talked about Larry Scott squandering a lot of that. If you're now going to ask, okay, we have to play this collective game. Now you're asking donors that you're sort of relying on their money for your
capital
department.
Projects, for like buildings, for whatever.
Now you're going to tell them or they're going to say, hey, I'm going to put half of the money I was going to give to you, I'm going to give to the players. that's probably not going to go over as well in the Pac-12 athletic departments, right? Because you're like, hey, we need that money.
Yeah, you need it.
Or maybe Alabama doesn't because they make so much money from the SEC.
Because that's the tough case to be made because you don't want to cannibalize. Well, I think the reality is athletic departments need to change their mindsets because so much more of the effort now has to go into money to the players. And even if you are cannibalizing your own donor streams, it's still more important to pay the players because that's how you get them into the school in the first place. That's how you generate more future donors because the school is going to be better at football because they're winning more games because you bought more players. So it's going to be tough. I think it requires a mindset change in the Pac-12, but I do think it'll eventually come.
All right. So we'll watch what Wilner has to say about that. There was also a 24/7 sports article I wanted to bring up. Brad Crawford wrote it projecting the 2022 preseason win totals. Well, projecting the win totals for the season, but this is like a preseason deal. I'll go through one by one, and maybe we can both give our over under. What do you think? I think they did that too. And they're, yes, I think, I think Bud, set the over unders and then Brad Crawford, gave hit, you know, or set the line and he gave their over unders. But, for Arizona, Bud's win total projection is 4 and Brad said he took the under. Where are you on this?
All right. So Arizona, to recap, has San Diego State on the road, Mississippi State at home, North Dakota State at home. Major win to go 2-1 through that.
Yeah. And then you only need 2 more.
I'm going 1-2 through that.
Okay.
Then they get Cal on the road, Colorado at home. Let's just say that. I'm going to split that.
Okay.
I think there's 2 wins total. Oregon at home, Washington on the road, USC at home.
Yeah, that probably 0-3 there.
Utah on the road, UCLA on the road. So I think collectively, you take that set of 5. I think they pull out 1 more win there.
Okay.
I don't know who, but 1 more win in that group. Then it's Washington State at home, Arizona State at home. 1 more win. So I'm going to say it is 4. The number is 4.
I would go with 4, and which is a big improvement, obviously, over 1.
Yeah.
But 4 seems... I can't...
If I had to pick 1, I would go over.
Really?
Yeah, because I could see them sweeping the last 2. Washington State at home and Arizona State at home.
Yeah, Arizona State's kind of a problem. I think that's a really good number, and... I wouldn't feel great on either side of it.
No, I think if you gun to my head, I would go over to the 4, but I think the number is 4.
All right. For Colorado, the Buffs, if you remember, were they like 4-2 or something in 2020?
Yes.
They were like, you know, they were really good. Projection for win total by Bud is 2.
All right. So here's what it is. TCU at home, Air Force on the road, Minnesota on the road.
Okay. So 0-3.
Yeah, probably, right?
Probably. Brad predicted over for the 2-win thing, just so you know.
All right. Then it's UCLA at home, Arizona on the road, Cal at home. All right. I'm going to say through that first 6, they get a win.
Sure. Okay.
Oregon State on the road, Arizona State at home, Oregon at home, USC on the road, Washington on the road, Utah at home.
I mean...
Yeah, I'm no kidding. That's a tough schedule.
I might hit the number again on this one. I think 2 is probably good, but
2 feels right.
But I would lean towards the under, which is not good. That means
I'm on the record as feeling very bad for Colorado and very bad for Colorado fans. But yeah, I'm under.
I mean, think about Arizona last year. Like the only reason they won was because of like a COVID thing. Like literally, that's the only reason they won a game. But this one, like, there's some teams that, I mean, I don't know how good Arizona State's going to be. I don't know, but this doesn't look good.
No.
I would not feel good saying Colorado's going to get 3 wins. I would much rather say on the number or under.
Sure.
David Shaw, Stanford Cardinal. Bud projects 4 wins for the Cardinal. And Brad, which I'm not liking Brad's picks right here, is going over of that.
All right, so here's what we got.
I don't even want to know the schedule. Under.
Agreed. Colgate at home, that's a win.
All right.
USC at home, Washington on the road, Oregon on the road.
Yeah, no.
I'm going to go 0-3, right?
Yeah, 0-3.
Oregon State at home, let's call that another win, just for the sake of argument, we're at 2.
Oregon State?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. But
let's just, All right. I'm just going to.
We're going to try.
All right. Notre Dame on the road. Nope.
No.
ASU at home?
Maybe.
Give them another one?
Yeah, let's give them one.
We're at three now. UCLA on the road? No way.
No, they UCLA got over that hump. So
Washington State at home?
I just like Washington State. I don't know. I mean, you could convince me.
I would maybe go between that. Between that ASU and Oregon State, I think there are two wins. I just don't know which ones.
Okay.
Stanford at Utah.
No.
Is next. No. At Cal.
I mean, could potentially.
They could. All right. So, and then BYU at home. Here's what I think Brad is doing. He's taking all of the ones that are semi toss ups and putting them in Stanford's win column, which we're not going to do.
No.
I'm going under. Four, at four, it's under.
Yeah. I like this number, but like, I mean, it was 3-8 last year. That's with wins over USC and Oregon. Like, holy cow. I don't think they're going in the right direction. So,
understatement of the year.
So we're gonna go under that one. All right, the California Golden Bears. I could have been playing the sounds, I guess, but Cal, Bud predicts 7 wins, and Brad goes under.
All right, let me pull up the schedule after your computer loads.
Is the equipment that I provide not to your satisfaction?
Never is. All right, UC Davis at home, that's a win. UNLV at home, that's a win. They're going at Notre Dame.
Wow.
Which is exciting. That's a loss, but they're going out there. Arizona at home, that's a win. So they're going to be 3-1.
Okay.
Heading into October. Then it's at Washington State and at Colorado. I think they take one of those.
Sure.
Okay. Then it's Washington at home.
They beat Washington all the time.
So we're at 5 then, right then.
Okay.
Oregon at home, loss. USC on the road, loss. Oregon State on the road.
That's a tough one on the road.
That's a tough one on the road. Stanford at home, we're calling that a win, I think, in our previous.
Yeah.
And then UCLA at home. So I think I got a couple of toss-ups to get to 7. I think I'm taking the under on the 7.
Yeah, I think I like the number again. I like 7.
Well, I like 7, but if I had to pick, I'm going under.
Okay. I'll go with you. I'll go under on that one, too. All right, next we got Oregon State. The Beavs, Bud predicts 7, and Brad says even on this one.
All right, Oregon State, they have Boise State at home, Fresno State on the road, Montana State at home in the non-conference. 2-1?
I'd go 2-1, yeah.
Then it's USC at home,
hey.
Utah on the road,
yeah.
Stanford on the road.
It's 1-2, 2-1-ish.
1-2. Let's go 1-2.
Okay.
All right. So we're at 3-3 right now. Washington State at home, Colorado at home. Should we be conservative and go 1-1?
Let's go 1-1. Be conservative.
All right. So 4-4. Washington on the road, Cal at home. Another 1-1?
Yeah.
All right. So 5-5. ASU on the road, Oregon at home.
I think 1-1 again.
6-6.
Yeah,
that's
so
where we
go
are.
Under. Okay. I mean, Oregon State could be better, but I think they're sort of like where they were. I don't know, but I'm gonna go under, which I don't feel good about. I like the Beavs.
Yeah, that's just the eyeball. We'll get deeper into it next.
All right, Washington State, the Cougs. Bud predicts 7, and Brad goes under on that one.
All right, so here's the schedule. Idaho at home, Wisconsin on the road, and Colorado State at home. So that looks like a 2-1 to me.
Okay.
Then it's Oregon at home, Cal at home, USC on the road.
1-2?
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're at 3-3. Then it's Oregon State on the road, Utah at home, and Stanford on the road.
That could be 1-2 also.
Yeah. So already we are at 4-6.
Yeah, this is...
So we're going under.
I think we're going under.
ASU at home, Arizona on the road, Washington at home. That's probably 2-1, but we're still...
Still like 6-6.
6-6.
Okay. ASU, Sun Devils, Bud has them at 6, and Brad says even.
All right, ASU's schedule, they have Northern Arizona at home, they have Oklahoma State on the road, and they have Eastern Michigan at home. So 2-1?
2-1.
All right, Utah at home,
no.
USC on the road, and Washington at home, 1-2.
I mean, you could talk me into 0-3, but I'll go 1-2.
I'll go 1-2.
Okay.
All right. So we're at 3-3. Then it's Stanford on the road, Colorado on the road, and UCLA at home. 1-2?
Yeah.
1?
Could be.
This is the swing part of the schedule.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes or breaks it. If they go 2-1 here, then it's, you know, they're getting to their 5 wins. Well, no, number is 6.
Jesus. Yeah. I think I'm going under, but
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I'll say 2-1 during that stretch.
Okay.
So they're at 5-4. Then it's Washington State on the road, Oregon State at home, and Arizona on the road.
I mean, you could easily go 1-2 or like
Here's what I'll say. You got to do some crazy shit to go over 6.
Like yeah.
They're going to have to do some nuts stuff to get over 6. So this is even or under for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you on that one too. But like, could they turn the corner and act like a competent football team again, or is it still, I mean, I'm thinking they're going to take a step backwards. So that's why I think some of those toss ups are like, oh, it's Arizona State. They got a lot of talent.
Right.
But they lose that game, you know.
Totes.
So I think I'm going to go under as well. The UCLA Bruins, win projection of 8, exactly what they did this year. Brad says even.
All right. They have Bowling Green at home, Alabama State at home, and South Alabama at home in non-conference. If they do not go 3-0, you should fire Chip Kelly.
Or counterpoint. Okay. All right, 3-0.
All right, 3-0. Then it's Colorado on the road, Washington at home, Utah at home.
What do you want to do?
I'm going to go 2-1.
Okay, I could go with you 2-1.
5-1. All right, then it's Oregon on the road, Stanford at home, ASU on the road.
Another 2-1. Do you think that'll be?
But we're already at 7-2, and that feels not right.
Oh, so maybe 8-1 would be the best.
All right, 7-2, and then it's Arizona at home, USC at home, and Cal on the road. So that could be 1-2.
Okay.
Beat Arizona. So that would put us at 8. But here's the thing. We got to 8 pretty easily there.
Okay.
So I think it's 8 or over.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I don't think it's under.
Right.
That non-conference is too easy for it to be
under. To start 3-0, then it's like, you have to win half your games in the Pac-12.
Yeah, so I think it's 8 or over.
Yeah, okay. I'll do that. We'll say over for... So if Chip goes from losing record, to 8 wins... Blow out of a rival, and then improves on it the next season.
I'm really tired. If I have to jump across these tables to strangle you, it's going to make me exhausted.
I think 9 wins is like when you sign one of those 10-year deals. I think that's what you're looking for. All right, Washington Huskies. Bud predicts 6, and Brad says over. What do you say?
Kent State at home, Portland State at home, and Michigan State at home. They could go 3-0 in that stretch. I will go 2-1.
Okay, a little conservative, but we'll take it.
Stanford at home, UCLA on the road, Arizona State on the road.
I got 2-1 again.
Okay, 4-2. Arizona at home, Cal on the road, Oregon State at home.
I don't know if it's a 1-2. It's between a 1-2, 2-1 kind of thing.
Okay.
I feel like we're going to get to 6, though.
Yeah, then it's Oregon on the road, Colorado at home, Washington State on the road. Yeah, I think we get to 6 pretty easy.
I think I'm going over here.
Yeah, this is an over.
Yeah, like there's enough of the toss-ups. And I feel like Kalen DeBoer is going to have this offense, you know, instead of like struggling to get triple-digit yards, you know, they're going to get points and things. Like it'll be a weird feeling in Seattle like to score a bunch of points and stuff, but I think they will. So I think you're going to win some of those games. So let's go over.
All right.
The Utes, you might remember them going to the Rose Bowl. Utah, win projection of 9, and Brad says over.
All right. So that will be at Florida, Southern Utah at home, and San Diego State at home.
So 2-1. So.
Let's go 2-1. Let's be conservative.
Yeah.
ASU on the road, Oregon State at home, UCLA on the road.
2-1 again.
So we're at 4-2 already with Utah. I think that's 3-0.
That could be 3-0. Yeah, I would go 3-0.
All right, I'm going 5-1. Then it's USC at home, which is going to be the game of the year.
But they win in Salt Lake City, so.
Yeah, so Utah going 6-1. Then it's Washington State on the road, Arizona at home, Stanford at home.
That's at least 2-1, but probably 3-0.
Yeah. So, and then it's Oregon on the road, which is going to be a pure toss-up, I think.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be Colorado on the road. Here's what I'll say. I think they're going 10-2.
I think so,
I don't know where the two losses are coming from. I'm going to say pencil one in as Florida and one in as either Washington State on the road, Oregon on the road, or maybe UCLA on the road. I think they will handle USC and Utah, though.
Oregon's probably going to be a loss. I mean, we haven't seen these teams play for a while, so we don't know what it would be like, but I assume Oregon will beat them. Right?
Well, because they've consistently handled Utah.
Right.
Especially last year.
Yes.
In games that were played in very close proximity to each other.
Right. Yes. I don't know. I think I'm definitely worse for that because I was on Utah the first game and you were not. You were like big into Oregon and you got crushed.
And then you tried to reverse psychology yourself.
I tried to reverse psychology myself, even though I saw what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And that didn't work.
No.
Okay. USC, Trojans, prediction, win total prediction of 8. And Brad is going over.
All right. So it's Rice at home, Stanford on the road, Fresno State at home.
Probably 3-0.
3-0.
Yeah.
Oregon State on the road, Arizona State at home, Washington State at home.
Probably 2-1.
2-1, so we're at 5-1.
Okay.
All right, Utah on the road, Arizona on the road, Cal at home. This could be a sneaky 1-2. Like, it absolutely could be, but I'll go 2-1.
I think it's going to be 2-1, but you could be. It could, yeah, like, if things aren't going right, like, that could be a 1-2.
Yeah, 7-2, and then Colorado at home, USC, UCLA on the road, and then Notre Dame at home. Are we going over on USC? Because that looks like 1-2 to, or that looks like 2-1 to me.
Yeah, I think a 9. I think 9 is where I would put this one.
Yeah.
You just don't know. I mean, they still haven't built their whole roster. Like, if they go and add a whole bunch more dudes, which Lincoln Riley says they're going to do, like, I'm not saying that it's going to make. You're adding all these like free agents, basically. It doesn't mean you're going to have a great team, but man, they're going to have a lot of good pieces. So
totes.
The Ducks, Oregon Ducks, Bud projects 9 wins, and Brad says that's right.
Even. All right. So they are playing Georgia, Eastern Washington, and BYU in non-conference.
BYU at home?
Yeah.
I mean, 2-1.
Sure.
Landanning goes to his old stomping grounds, but probably gets beat up a little bit.
Gets stomped. Washington State on the road, Stanford at home, Arizona on the road. Another 2-1.
You could even talk me 3-0, but I'll go 2-1. Yeah, well,
Washington State and Arizona will both be frisky this year. One of them could do it.
Yeah.
All because they were 4-2. UCLA at home, Cal on the road, Colorado on the road. That I'll go 3-0.
Okay, that's 3-0 to me.
Yeah, so that's 7-2, and then it's Washington at home, Utah at home, and Oregon State on the road.
That could be a 1-2.
It could be a 1-2.
I mean, they could lose all those games.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1. I'll say 9-3. I say it's even.
I'm gonna go,
but I would go under if I had to pick one.
Yeah, I think even's right, but I will go under also because that one, like, yeah, that's a tough stretch for to go 2-1 in those last three games. I think would be something.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, there was a little game we were playing there. Real quick. So I had, before we jump into questions, I've had Chris Trevino in here who is, you know, works for our site, and we've been doing a podcast together. We have been filming it and like simulcasting it basically. So put it up on YouTube. Since you're in the studio, like we could do something like that. We don't have like a YouTube page or anything.
We would have to do that if we're going to do that.
And actually that's more work for me because I got to like edit the video and stuff. Which probably not. But if you're a listener out there and you're like, yes, we want to see your ugly mugs.
I
want to
see
mugs.
Your fucking.
I want to see what happens when Ryan's talking about spring football. What is David Woods doing? Like looking on his phone.
No, I'm gonna have to like actually pay attention to this show now.
Looking at the camera and things. All right. Well, let us know if that's something you like. You really, really want. We could potentially do that. Why would I add more work to myself? I don't know. Maybe David will handle that part. That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I can see
that seems likely.
I can see that happening. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with some questions. All right, we got a couple of voicemails. You want to start with those?
I would love to start with those.
All right, Ryan. Here we go. First up.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk calling in for my weekly routine, as Ryan calls it. I want to say back when the whole NIL stuff was kind of coming to fruition and there was some debate over what some of the schools in the Pac-12 footprint can offer. I believe, I've heard this in other places, but David kind of mentioned how if you take the top-ranked football players like in the ESPN 300, most of them are pretty grounded in the sense that some of them might make the NFL or might not be a high draft pick. Whereas, you know, David had mentioned that you talk to any kid that's really in the ESPN 100 for basketball and they all think they're going to be a surefire draft prospect. And I was wondering, why do you guys think that is? Is it just kind of the difference between the football and basketball players? Do you think it's kind of a difference between who's surrounding them in some of these situations in terms of, you know, kind of the grassroots or travel program coaches? I was just kind of curious because I've heard that bounced around quite a bit. Thanks, guys.
I don't think I'm following this.
So he's, what's the difference between the football recruits at the top level and the basketball recruits at the top level? Like in the top 300 in football versus the top 100 in basketball?
Okay.
And this is like, yeah, it's totally a thing where basically anybody who's like in the top 100 in basketball, they were mostly identified as like ninth graders. In football, it's later generally because there's a lot more players and the travel circuit isn't quite as robust. So it's regional. My theory on it is there's not as much smoke blown up their asses from a younger age. And so they're a little bit more grounded. Their families are a little bit more involved in the actual process. Whereas in the basketball world, a lot of it will be handlers. A lot of it will be the shoe companies. A lot of it will be just kind of random hangers on around the recruit who are telling him, you know, what he wants to hear the whole time.
Yeah.
That he's going to be, you know, the best player since LeBron. And that just happens a little bit more in basketball. And I think it's just the nature of those recruitments. They start earlier. The kids are identified earlier. They're playing on these national travel circuits earlier. The hype videos that you see on Twitter, you don't really see for like even junior football players. It's not until senior year where you start like seeing those sorts of things, but it also isn't the same way. I mean, there's a lot more. I don't know, like when you see like clips of Peyton Watson dunking on Chet Holmgren in summer action in 2021 or whatever, it's like, oh, wow, that's amazing. But like, you know, Brandon Huffman had a great clip of Najee Harris as a recruit doing some crazy juke moves, and it was nowhere near as big as that sort of thing.
Right.
It's just a different vibe and a different feel around it. I think it's easier for people to understand when they're seeing somebody really good in basketball, like common idiot. And then the common idiot is also like pumping that up, like talking about this, like not even incoming freshman in college as if he's like the best thing ever because it's easier for them to understand it. Whereas in football, like a lot of these guys who are going to be great players are not actually doing much of anything as sophomores in high school. Like they're still growing into their bodies or whatever. A lot of like guys who project as great offensive linemen in college are like, oh, it's just a great body that you're seeing in high school.
Right.
So it's, you know, there's just a lot to it. And it's but it fundamentally does, like as you were saying, comes down to who's around them and blowing smoke up their ass.
And I do think just the sports are different where in seventh grade, you knew LeBron James was going to be great. Now,
right.
he wasn't 6'9", 270 pounds or whatever he is, like, you know.
But you even knew that. But like, that's the thing is you even knew that about Kevin Love as an eighth grader. Like you understood it because of just like. But also, it's the nature of that entire apparatus is that you are watching guys in eighth grade. That you're not doing that with football because most guys aren't playing football in eighth grade.
Yeah. But even so, they're not. If you're going to be an amazing, if you're like Jonathan Ogden or something, like you're probably bigger than everybody when you're in eighth grade. But no one's going to think, oh, you're going to be like a Hall of Fame left tackle kind of dude.
No. Yeah, exactly.
There's guys that are that big that just won't be that good. The skills you can kind of see in basketball, I think, a little bit easier. And it's tough. The bodies are really important in football. And there's so many guys that were 240 pounds, even like as juniors, and they end up 310 pounds in college, you know, like that just even when you're later in the high school years, but you could identify basketball players just a lot earlier, I think. And that's a big part of it too.
Yep.
Okay. Our buddy's back. So we talk about Stanford. We both predicted Payne again. Clever Lang, Payne. What's your prediction? Payne. The Zodiac Killer's back. I haven't listened to this yet. I could tell just from looking at the first five words who sent this voicemail in. It's a little long, but But I'll play it for you guys, and hopefully we won't get shut down because of it. But I think we'll be okay. Here we go.
Well, well, well. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right, it's me, the Zoradi resident Stanford fan. Hey, been missing you guys. Been missing all of this self-loathing torture we put ourselves through as Pac-12 fans. And so I've spent some time in the cave of self-reflection. I've been reflecting on not only my own fandom, but also all of Stanford's 19 wins in the two major sports. That's football and basketball combined. Now, our women are, Stanford's a place where the women are total badasses, so I don't mean to discount them here. I just was reflecting on the two sports I personally follow the most closely, football and basketball. 19 total wins. Whew. Ryan, I have to say, I agree with you. We are, but of those 19 wins, three of them, that's just under 1/6, which if my math serves me right, about 18% of our wins came against USC. That's right. A football massacre ended the tenure of our beloved Clay Helton in two, count them, two victories over the USC Trojans' highly touted basketball team. So my question for you is, if we're butts, what are you, SC? Keep it mediocre, boys.
That's a great question.
It is a great one. I mean, obviously Stanford, David Shaw did USC a favor, because got rid of Clay Helton. Didn't do you a favor.
I mean, he broke hearts and minds throughout the league.
Many hearts and minds were broken throughout the league. But I'm not the biggest basketball person, but I think when Stanford beat USC basketball, like, they were actually good. Like, that was like a what happened, right? Like, USC was actually playing pretty well when they lost to Stanford.
Yeah.
So those were good. Like, those were good, legit, you know. They didn't have a lot of other
Stanford
wins.
Wasn't good though.
No, but they beat USC. Like, uh-huh. When not like, I think there was some COVID time, like they were COVID stuff. I don't think one of the Stanford games was like that, but one of them was like complete shock, I believe. Like, holy crap, how did Stanford beat USC? So yeah, those are, Sith Lord got a couple good ones.
You got
USC went out in the first round of the tournament, so I don't know how good you're going to feel, but.
Pretty shitty.
Yeah, but Sith Lord's back.
Sith Lord.
Oh, you're the Sith Lord.
I'm the Sith Lord.
He's the Zodiac Killer.
He's the Zodiac Killer.
I love it.
All right. This is from Paul Webfoot.
Okay.
You don't deserve this email. You tweeted that you didn't get any emails because you talked about basketball. Then you talked on the show about how you didn't get any emails because you talked about basketball. Both times you swore to never do it again, and then you did immediately. You literally followed up swearing off basketball talk with giving us more basketball talk. Your next tweet mentioned it as well. I love you both dearly, but you must learn. I couldn't decide if I should email you to scold you or simply withhold emails again, but decided this was more fun. I would have left you a 4-star review just for this, but that would involve using my wife's iPhone, and that's too much work. So no Civil War generals, no which coaches like which kind of liquor, and definitely no Disney princesses. Also, no line breaks. Never again should you mention basketball unless Kelly Graves and Dana Altman figure their shit out. Then y'all go no truck stops and never and just never talk football until the tournament ends. Yours truly, Webfoot Paul.
Yeah. And you know, I'm big on not talking about basketball, but sometimes people are avoiding football and you're just talking about basketball. Like, come on, you can't do that. You can't just like, I could maybe mention it, but heck, you can't just do all basketball. Like, there's, who would do that? That just seems like ridiculous.
There's many months of the year where I would like to do that.
Off-season chat from our buddy Mark in Vancouver. He loves us dearly, by the way. Webfoot loves us dearly.
I like that.
That was kind of cool. That was very.
I love, like, being loved dearly.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's nice of Webfoot that
you
would say that.
Yeah, I like being loved.
Hello, champions. You both are desperate for any kind of content, so here's a topic. Oh my god, we're gonna get a whole bunch of emails of like list a billion things. We did this to ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what this is, but I'm assuming
right. There's
gonna be a lot of stuff that's gonna take hours. David has frequently disdained the IPA category of beer, saying that they just taste like flowers that grew out of an armpit. And Mark agrees. So if not IPAs, then what are your favorite beer styles and what are your particular favorites? Keep up the mediocrity, Mark in Vancouver.
Well, I can tell you that one of Ryan's favorites is a mango beer.
Mango cart is like, if they don't have the other beers I like, I go with that.
But what are the other beers you like? I want to hear about this.
Okay, so I love reds. Reds and ambers are my... So like if you were like a generic... Not generic, but just like if you're in the store, you might see like a Fat Tire. That's an amber. I like those. I went over to Ireland a few years ago. I always liked reds. They had Smittix was like on tap everywhere. I have some Smittix in my fridge right now. If you can find it, like good liquor stores or like the big wine stores will have stuff like that. It's spelled Smithwix, but it's Smittix. You just say that. But just the malty kind of stuff. I like that for reds and ambers. So I try to get those at places. If they don't, and it's like basically like you're getting Bud Light or Pacifico or something. But if they have a mango cart, I'll get that. There's some interesting flavors with that. So
the fruitier the beer, the less I like it, generally speaking.
Okay.
I like a lot of stouts.
Yeah, like Guinness is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably if I have like my choice of something and it's like, you know, the thing is like Guinness is like, I don't know if it's just like your own psychology at play, but I'm not like wanting to like drink Guinness like when I'm like outside. Like that seems like an indoor nighttime beer. Whereas, you know, you want to drink something like just like a Pilsner of some sort when you're outside.
Yeah, yeah. Like something day that's drinking. Refreshing. Yeah, that's not like if you can eat it with a spoon, it's hard, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I had it like that's another one I had in Ireland. And when they pour like it's poured well there, it's like that, you know, that's good. But I don't find myself like, hey, give me a Guinness, because you might not get like it's not like the specialty. It's like if I'm going to Chicago, I'm not ordering sushi. Like I sort of want it like if it's like an Irish pub and they do it right, like okay, I'll get the Guinness, you know. But if it's like the local bar, like I don't know if they're gonna do it right. You know?
The most important thing I want to convey is that I am not picky about beers at all, and I will drink IPAs. What pisses me off about IPAs are the obnoxious IPA people.
Oh yes,
yeah,
it's like soccer fans,
the ones who are like, oh my god. Taste this one. It's got some sort of other thing. And then you taste it. And invariably, that person is giving you rotten flowers. And you're drinking them. And like the thing is, if you just handed me a beer and it tastes like rotten flowers, I'm going to drink it. Because,
right.
Look, guys, again, I need to make this point because I feel like I'm making enough. None of this stuff tastes good. Like, none of it tastes better than chocolate milk. The reason we're drinking it is not because it tastes good. Okay? The reason we're drinking it is to make our heads kind of funny. That's it. That's the only reason we're doing it. Let's all just be honest with each other. We can talk about like, oh, this beer is a little bit better than that one. And yeah, sure. We're talking about like rotten things. Like they're literally rotten. That's how fermentation happens. They're rotting. So it's fine. It's all rotten. And it's great. But like the same thing with wine. Like, no, this tastes no better than like a glass of water. I'm drinking it to make my head bad.
It's like grape juice.
No, it doesn't taste like grape juice. Grape juice is delicious. It's got a shitload of sugar in it. It's
there's
delightful.
Sugar in wine. There's
yeah, it's fine. No, it tastes kind of bitter and harsh, but whatever. Red wine gives you heartburn. It's fine. All of it's fine.
All right.
But you're drinking it to make your head bad.
Yes.
That's the reason. So like, let's stop sitting here talking about, oh my God, I love drinking a refreshing IPA. No, you don't. You love drinking chocolate milk and you tolerate IPAs to make your head bad.
Nice. That's good. Chocolate milk. Okay. I do love me some chocolate.
Who doesn't?
Strawberry milk? Do you ever have that? Like,
yeah, I've had it. It's fine.
It's like almost more sugar. I think it probably is.
It probably is because they've got a they actually have to disguise the strawberry enough to make kids drink it.
And I was always more, I don't know if they even do it now. Like as a kid, there was the powder and then like the syrup. I mean, the syrup is awesome. I put it on like ice cream and stuff, but I was more of a powder in the milk guy. I don't know.
Mm, interesting.
Were you like a syrup in the milk
syrup,
guy?
Syrup.
Okay.
Absolutely syrup.
They might not even do the powder anymore. I'm old, so.
I remember still seeing it around, but no, it's always been syrup.
Okay. What do we got
in
next?
This house. All right. Next up, we have from Mike. Podcast of Champs question. Hail and well met, Ryan and Dave. I trust this email finds you well. As a loyal listener of the podcast for many years, I have heard your cries for content and am here to oblige. We've heard the dribble about Disney princesses and Civil War generals before, but that might not be dialogue that panders to your target audience. After careful consideration, I'd like to propose a new discussion topic that more closely aligns with what I imagine is more relevant to the average listener. If each Pac-12 football program was a beer, What brand would they be? Please discuss and support your thesis statements. I very much look forward to hearing this discourse.
Or you want to keep going? Are we?
Or maybe we could just get more spring practice updates from Dave. Have a blessed day, Mike.
Yeah, this is tough because, I mean, I think we could get some. I think we've done this, right?
We have done this.
Do you remember any of
No.
Yeah, this is hard to do.
It's very hard to do.
So it's sort of like this. We kind of need user listener interaction.
We'll need some input.
Hey, Shane.
Yeah, one of you. On this. One of you insane beer people that I've just denigrated. Can you do this?
We'll read it and laugh, and we'll think it's very funny. But I don't think either one of us would come up with why? Because you need to know
Utah's chocolate milk, by the way.
Because it's the taste the best, or this.
Well, it's in Utah, so they're not drinking a ton of beer there.
Very good point.
And
yeah.
Then, because like at the end of the day, they're better than everyone else. Like you can talk about the nuances of all the other ones, but it's chocolate milk.
What's the Heineken no alcohol beer that they have commercials for? Like,
yeah,
Utah could be that one.
Could
or something.
Be. Yeah, but that probably doesn't taste very good.
Okay, so Colorado has to be like one of those. Fruit, like those, like
yes.
IPAs
yes.
that's just like insufferable.
Yes.
Like certainly. Oregon could probably be that too.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon State might be like a stout or something.
Yeah.
Maybe a brown beer. Yeah, there'd be a brown beer.
USC would be a Heineken because it was much better in the 60s.
Nice.
Wasn't that when that became a big thing?
I don't know.
That's when I think it was first imported into the United States.
Nice. There you go. Arizona is like Corona or like Pacifico. Like it's got to be like Mexican.
No. Arizona's like, it's like Milwaukee's best light.
Okay. Who do you want to give like the Corona or Pacifico beer to?
Corona's UCLA and Chip Kelly, baby.
Okay. Why?
He likes Coronas.
Oh, okay. Well, I was thinking, you know, ASU is like, it's like Bud Light. Like, it's just like party all the time. Like, it's just like,
what can you drink the most while playing Flip Cup?
That's okay. Now we're doing this. God damn it.
Stanford. No, Stanford is Stanford is like, what's the nonsense IPA that everyone's friggin' talking about all the time? The one where they only open like a single cask in like one bar in like Thousand Oaks every year.
Oh, I don't know.
It's Pliny the Younger or Elder, whichever. It doesn't matter.
One of those?
They're one of the stupid ones.
Okay.
Cal is...
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah. So, okay, I think we're done.
We're done.
We hit like the high notes and then... Yeah. But someone else...
Give something good.
We'll give you a head start. All right. This one... is from Ross, Nix/Williams. Hey guys, Ross from Oregon. He put his name right at the beginning. I was looking, he didn't sign at the end, so I didn't see it. Since both of you guys were highly rated high school prospects and have shown they can play good football and are now in a new league and assuming both are, I'm confused here.
You added a U where there was none?
Since both guys. Okay. Oh, okay. He's referring to...
Mm-hmm. To the two people he's going to name in just a second.
Okay. Well, he put it in the subject, Nix and Williams.
There you go.
We could use full names. Since both guys were highly rated high school prospects and have shown they could play good football and are now in a new league and assuming both are starters, do you see Bo Nix and Caleb Williams being the top quarterbacks in the Pac-12 this season? Thanks. Love the show. And as always, go Ducks.
You're
Ducks
half
from Ross.
You're half right, Ross.
Yeah, I think Caleb Williams. I'm not sure.
Bo Nix isn't good.
I have not been impressed with Bo Nix.
Bo Nix isn't good. He's going to be a middle of the pack starter in the league this year.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, but that's fine.
But I think
that'll
Oregon
be, that'll be probably a little bit better than you were doing last year.
They could have a better guy on the roster too.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
Like Bo Nix might not be the starter, or maybe starts as
yeah,
starter.
Like the most he's ever averaged per attempt is 7.4 yards. He's mediocre.
Yeah,
at best. That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Next up. We got Greg. No more basketball talk. Okay, I'm glad you stopped talking about basketball. Now we can move on to the good sports, baseball. Do you think that college baseball could really benefit from giving NIL deals to baseball players? Maybe players would reconsider going pro since the minors are hard to get through. You get the college experience, maybe a degree, make money, and MLB is always on strike anyways. What do you guys think? And aren't you glad I didn't ask about basketball? Thanks, Greg. This is interesting.
It is interesting. It's funny
because
that people...
baseball doesn't have enough scholarships.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, you could get money, but you're not getting your education paid for.
But maybe you could. Like, what I'm saying is do a little NIL money. Because the thing is, a lot of schools in the Pac-12 have Major League Baseball players making a shitload of money who'd probably be willing to give back. I mean, what are we talking here? $20,000 or $30,000 a year to make sure that you can give out truly a full complement of scholarships every year?
That's interesting. So, like, a place like Stanford doesn't need it, right? Because they have the endowment that everyone gets their tuition paid for or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
no matter what, basically.
But there's other school, you know, if your tuition's high, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because like UCLA, you get like 11 and a quarter scholarships or something, and you get like, there's like 30 dudes on a roster or something. I don't know what it is, something like that. It's not easy.
Yeah. So you could, I mean, there could be, that's the interesting thing is that I think, especially with baseball, I think there's real benefits to come from NIL for these guys because of the amount of, because it's not a big college sport, but it's a very, very lucrative pro sport, which means that there's a lot of guys with money who came from these college baseball programs who can now support those programs. You know, I mean, UCLA has got several guys who have made over $100 million in Major League Baseball now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like it'd be that much of a stretch for them to each give back like a couple hundred thousand dollars a year and make sure they give out some real scholarships.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. I got to get out of here pretty soon because of football practice, but we still got a bunch of questions left. We'll get through them. Utah recruiting after Kyle McDonald. This is from Matt in Denver. Ryan and Dave, I have to listen. Oh, is this my turn? I guess it is. If I have to listen to another episode of Ryan providing weekly recaps of spring practices with breaking news updates to the time and date of spring games, I'm going to lose my mind. So here's a real question that should provide for at least a few minutes of non-bouncy hoops content. With the departure of Utah's running backs coach, Kyle McDonald, to USC, what impact do you see that having on Utah's recruiting and development of running backs? I feel like Utah's been blessed, hashtag blessed, with a steady stream of dudes in the backfield for a few years now. How much of that is due to Kyle McDonald, and how much of it is due to overall program stability? And Ryan, have you seen any impacts at USC since McDonald has been hired? Thanks for keeping it mediocre, Matt in Denver. Talked to him a few times already and very impressed with him. There's players, you know, he even talked about like Austin Jones transferred from Stanford is a guy that he had recruited. I think he might have done the same thing with Travis Dye. I think they're making some inroads. Certain, you know, they got a five-star running back at the end of the 2022 cycle and Raylick Brown too. I think he's had good, an impact there. But I feel like with Utah, yeah, he was a really good recruiter, but the culture and all of that and the traditions that Kyle Whittingham had put together, just being able to win, I think that was a big impact too. But I don't know who they replaced him with and how good a recruiter is, but I do believe McDonald is a really good recruiter just from talking to him and seeing his results.
Yeah, and I mean they had good running backs before McDonald. I mean Devontae Booker was before him.
He's great.
So I don't think it's like that program is head coach driven. I don't think it has heavy reliance on any one assistant coach. And their new running backs coach is Quentin Ganther.
Where did he come from?
Well, now you're asking me a question that I don't have the answer to.
That's okay.
Is it okay? I don't think it's okay. I think he was previously serving as the running backs coach at Weber State. Most recently. He was an offensive assistant for Jacksonville. Is that right?
Oh, okay.
And now he's with Utah.
NFL guy.
Yeah. All right. But before that, he was the running backs coach for Weber State.
But I do like him. I like him as a recruiter. So
you like Quentin Ganther as a recruiter?
I like him too.
Yeah. Why don't you clarify your antecedents?
Sure. I think it's your turn. I think I might have done two in a row. Sorry.
No, I don't think you did. I think you just missed that I had talked about, what Greg had said about baseball.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Here's from Cameron in Costa Mesa. Boys, thanks for keeping us all entertained in the long offseason. Question for you boys. If you were to go back and play college football, which school would you go to and what position would you play? I've got a really quick and easy answer.
I think I remember you said something like this
before. If I was to go back and play college football, I would quit immediately because I don't want to get hit by anyone.
Okay. Good point.
That's it. And if I was going to play, it'd be kicker.
kicker. I kind of want to be part of the team, though. Like,
I'll, no, I'm going to just be a guy who shags balls during everyone else's drills and then a kick. That's it.
I would go tight end because I think I can, you know, I have a frame I could put some weight on.
Mm-hmm.
My hands are pretty good. I catch some balls. Probably wouldn't be playing much, but, you know, I'd be on the team. Where would I play? Anywhere? Like, if we just say Pac-12, we should probably just say Pac-12.
You got to go Pac-12. The best of the best.
The best of the best. I mean, Stanford would be pretty cool. I could either go, like, it would probably for either be, like, Stanford or, like, Arizona State. Like, where am I going to have the most fun or, like, where am I going to get, like, a crazy education?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's Stanford or ASU.
I'm not going to say which one was fun and which one's education, but
yeah,
I'm just going
to... Yeah, you should be able to figure that one out.
But, like, just ASU, everything I've heard is just ASU people just, like, have a freaking blast there. Like, which, how do you go wrong with that? Oregon will be better in 2022. This is Frank in Sacramento. Oregon fell off in 2021 once Miami got to a 2-4 record in mid-October. That's when Mario Cristobal got distracted, knowing he could be getting the Hurricane job. With Cristobal dreaming about going home, Oregon then lost to Stanford and was later blown out twice by Utah, and Cristobal was very nonchalant in his interviews after those beatdowns. Lan Danning will not be distracted this year, and the Ducks will be very tough with a TUFF. Frank in Sacramento.
All right.
It's a theory.
That's certainly a theory,
First of
Frank.
All, Frank, you said Lan Danning, which I didn't have to change that. That was actually written.
We've done that now.
Yeah.
We've made that happen.
So hold on. Let me give him some. Just for you, Frank. Just for writing in Lan Danning. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think the loss to Stanford was more of a offensive coordinator not being there kind of thing. But
agreed.
Yeah.
All right. This is a long email.
Holy cow.
This is from Scooter McGavin. All right. This is.
Should we do this in parts? Like the first paragraph this week and then the second paragraph next week? And I don't know.
There's no way out but through.
Okay.
Pity email. Dear Ryan and Dave, the two of you were quite distraught on last week's episode over not receiving any emails. Even Hithloday, the man whose sole purpose in life is to spew psychotic takes on message boards, has refused to write you. Ryan seems to be under the delusion that this lack of listener engagement is due to discussing basketball, and if you only return to your regularly scheduled programming of lazy football reporting, then the emails will come flooding back.
I think we've proven that because we've got a flood of emails.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Let me clear up any confusion you have. Your show sucks. It always has and always will. You are neither entertaining nor informative. The only reason your dozen listeners have stuck around is a combination of Stockholm Syndrome and jockey gift cards.
I think we're entertaining.
I like that.
I would say not informative, but entertaining.
Man, who knows? To save your listeners from more of your inane drivel, I've compiled what I believe to be the most important list ever shared on this show. I give to you the Pac-12 head coaches as lovers. Please note that I have not been intimate with all of these coaches, so some of these are purely speculative. Kalen DeBoer, Washington, the middle-aged middle manager from eHarmony. This man has spent the last two decades cultivating a successful career and friend group. Everyone in his life speaks incredibly highly of him, and he brings incredible passion to the bedroom. You have all of the new relationship butterflies and feel incredibly lucky to have landed him. Jake Dickert, Wazoo. After being forced to dump your previous boyfriend for being a conspiracy theory nutjob, you were left to date the only person you could realistically pull, his no-name acquaintance. His dating history is practically non-existent, but so far the sex has been decent, so you're ready to give it a shot. What choice do you really have?
This is going to be good.
Lan Danning, Oregon, the Tinderella. After years of worrying it might happen, your ex finally left you to be with his high school sweetheart. In turn, you downloaded the trendiest dating app and found what appeared to be a catch. He's hot, knows just how to give it to you, and seems to be real boyfriend material. The relationship is still new, but you're thrilled with where it's going. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State, the match made in heaven. From the moment you met him in college, you were enamored with him. After years apart, you ran into him at the grocery store, and the rest is history. The two of you have been building a beautiful relationship, and he's open to trying new things. Winky face. The two of you feel right at home together.
Nice.
Justin Wilcox, Cal, gentleman on the streets, freak in the sheets. He comes off as a nice, sweet boy, but has done filthy, unspeakable things to you. You're still not sure if he's, quote, the one, but he leaves you walking bow-legged, which is all you can really ask for at this point in your life.
Whoa.
David Shaw of Stanford, the dead bedroom. What was once a beautiful and happy marriage has slowly slipped into mutual indifference. This love is no longer there, but you have a house and three kids, so you're committed to riding this out to the end.
think he nailed it.
Kyle Whittingham of Utah. This is the guy your parents always wanted you to marry. He goes to church every Sunday, owns his own home, and has a great career as an accountant. Sure, the sex is vanilla as root beer float, but he still gets rock hard for you three times a week, so can you really complain? Carl Durrell of Colorado. After being dumped by the only decent boyfriend you had in years, you immediately rebounded with your friend's old ex. His only redeeming qualities were that he was living nearby and already knows your friend group. The relationship has quickly and obviously deteriorated, and your friend group is wondering if you even give a shit anymore.
That's good.
Jed Fish of Arizona, the bad boy. He hasn't held a stable job at any point in his life, still drives an old beater, but damn it if he isn't one of the most charming people you've ever met. He says he's a changed man and throws you around in the bedroom like a helpless rag doll, so you're cautiously optimistic this will work out. Herm Edwards, ASU, you dumped your previous boyfriend for being too mediocre, so you went out and found the most mediocre person you could find, a sweet-talking used car salesman. You were very optimistic it would work out, particularly because of how firm he gave it to you, but the relationship has predictably turned out very mediocre. To top it off, you caught him selling your used panties on Craigslist, but the breakup would be too much of a mess because he's your brother's best friend. Chip Kelly of UCLA, the guy who peaked in high school. He was the starting QB on your state championship team, but flunked out of college and got a job at the local luxury car dealership because the owner is a big supporter of your local schools. He puts zero effort into the relationship and thinks that leasing you a Lexus and drilling you for 2 minutes once a month is enough to keep you satisfied. Lincoln Riley of USC, the Giga Chad. This guy has it all. The body of a Greek god, pulls well over six figures with a huge mansion, unending stamina, and is easily 6 inches flaccid. His ex-girlfriend had a very public, very hilarious meltdown when he dumped her. You're making all of your friends jealous, and they all not so secretly hate you, but they're sticking around in the hopes they'll get to occasionally ride on his yacht. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy show to read this, and have a wonderful day. Sincerely, Scooter McGavin.
Scooter, that was well done.
That was incredible.
See, that was way better than asking us to say, yeah, here's just, the Pac-12 coaches as lovers.
Look, I'm not saying we're the best readers in the world, but we certainly do a lot better than coming up with our own thoughts.
Right. Very good stuff, Scooter. We should probably put that in the blog because that was
very good.
We could put that in there. Dave, that's up to you. Yeah, I'm sure it'll happen. Uh-huh. This is from Montlake Blake. Question for the media elite. Gents, as I think members of the CBS mega media conglomerate, you seem like two people most suited to answer this question. Correction, you two seem like the most likely to accurately have the time on your hands to field this question. Why do autoplay videos exist on websites? I assume the answer is, quote, because money, but I can't possibly fathom a financial reason for a banner video to autoplay when it's only tangentially related to the topic I sought out with my click. Media elite, explain yourselves. Go dogs. Montlake Blake.
Would you like me to tell you?
Yes.
It's all a fraud. It's a fraud from the jump, from the people who pitch these ad platforms. It's a fraud that we're perpetuating on people with those autoplay ads. It's all a fraud. It's built on this idea that those are monetized at a rate higher than banner ads that don't play videos because of gamed statistics from various media companies saying that video, has X value because it converts at X rate, which is all bullshit. It's all horseshit. It doesn't make any sense. It's never made any sense. Every goddamn media company that has pivoted to video has failed for the very obvious reason that it doesn't make any goddamn sense. Wow. People would prefer to read. This is true. This is fundamentally true. If you're watching something that is people talking, it's a lot easier to read it yourself, and most people would prefer to read. They would prefer to do that. The only situations where you want to watch something are in very specific circumstances. But there's this perpetual belief that there's money to be made here. That's why.
We had a previous CEO of one of the companies we were at that was, I remember specifically him saying, people aren't their desks. Like there's a, I think he said the example was like a lawyer at their desk doesn't want to read. They want to look on their phone and watch a video. And it was like, the exact opposite. Like he tried to encourage us not to write, that we were all, everything right. should have been video because the ad rates on videos are just higher and you're looking for some kind of,
but
viral
they're
videos.
Higher because of, I mean, it's because of fraud. Like it's not, they're not, there's not actually value there. It's made up. Like it's all made up because they're, to your point, human behavior, you would rather read something because you get the content quicker. Like when I'm passively sitting on the toilet looking at my phone, I'm not watching a shitload of videos. I'm reading stuff. for a lot of reasons. Do you want a bunch of sound coming out of your phone or your computer when you're ostensibly supposed to be working and or shitting? No.
No.
You don't. You want to be reading the thing because that's something you can do passively and secretively. Think about the behavior of people at work. It's not the lawyer. It's the underlings of that lawyer, the four of them who are assistants who might get yelled at their job if they're not doing their job. Do you think they want just like video blaring from their fucking computer? No.
No, they don't want that.
You read things. That's what you do at work. You read. You're not sitting there watching like, oh, God, I really want to watch this scout now talking about the recruits at this event.
Scout now.
Am I blowing up? Am I blowing up Jim Heckman now? Stupid.
Yes. And
it's a great way to ruin a business is my point. And I think here's what I'll say about 247. I think they do a pretty good job of balancing it all.
I think
there's a reality to the money that you have to do it. But I think 247 does a much better job than Scout was doing before.
And there's also sort of an incentive where if you are a paid subscriber, that's something they can say, we're not going to autoplay videos or whatever. Like you can take away some of the more annoying parts of ads.
And I would say, I think largely speaking, 247's got a better ad platform than any of these other iterations that we've worked for.
Yeah. All right. I think we got one last one.
All right. This is from Sean from Ohio. Question. Gents, Sean from Ohio. I racked my brain to come up with a question for you this week. Here goes. With the spending in the sport going ballistic and the SEC and the Big Ten distancing themselves, does it make sense for the conference to continue to schedule out-of-conference games against those two conferences? Would it enhance the chances of a team getting into a playoff if they stayed away from those two and focused on the Big 12 and the ACC to fill spots in the future? Does the possibility of more teams in the playoff make this even more practical? Love the show. Sean from Ohio.
I mean, I still like scheduling. Just because they're going to make more money doesn't mean you can't schedule games against them, I think. But
there's no reason you can't beat Indiana.
Yeah.
Keep playing Indiana.
Vanderbilt's.
There's no reason you can't beat Rutgers.
But the games you want to see is like Oregon going to Georgia, you know, probably not going to end well.
No, probably not. But I think the disparity is like maybe a little bit overblown. Like, I think, Georgia and Alabama are playing a different sport. Ohio State's playing a different sport. Everyone else is still playing the same sport. It's just a little bit worse.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we got a lot of good questions this week.
So many good questions.
Yeah.
We loved every minute.
We're back talking about
only things that are not related to basketball.
Yeah. Gridiron. Maybe baseball.
Baseball in the diamond.
Mm.
Not the gridiron.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. We do appreciate it. Please leave us a 5-star rating over on the Apple Podcasting app. We'd love to read it at the top of the show before we get too tired and we don't have no energy to read your stuff at the end. So that's one of the benefits. You can send us an email. You leave us an Apple review. Boom. We're going to read it right at the top of the show when we're all spry, when we just have energy. We're ready to go. And not lethargic and not dreading going to football practice right now, but that's where we are. So we're gonna wrap it up. I am Ryan Abraham. That is David Woods, and we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Thank you so much for listening to our little show, and we will talk to you next time.